So today I'm going to be talking about quantized Hall pneumatic, and it's based off of some work with Shamit Katru and Chetan Nayak, and also a recent experiment by Gia Eisenstein and Pfeiffer and West. So the two-dimensional electron gas has been a consistent source of novel and interesting phases of strongly correlated matter. At very low filling fraction, or very large magnetic field, less than, say, 1/7, the system is in a Wigner crystal phase that breaks continuous translational symmetry. At larger values of nu, or filling fraction, but still in the lowest lambda level, the system realizes the fractional quantum Hall effect, as this experimental plot shows. And so in the quantum Hall state, the conductivity, the Hall conductivity, sigma xy, is fractionally quantized at odd denominator values with asymptotically vanishing longitudinal conductivity, sigma xy, as the temperature is taken to zero. And there exists well-defined plateau transitions between adjacent Hall states. So in this figure, if it's not clear, the plateaus that you can kind of see is this basically linearly rising function, and the longitudinal resistances are the ones that go to zero along each plateau. And throughout this talk, I'll be using this phrase, fractionally quantized. And all I mean is that more or less the existence of a plateau of some function or some vanishing first derivative. At still larger filling fractions and higher lambda levels, new phenomena again appear. For example, at the 5/2 plateau, there exists fractional quantum Hall plateau that may be described by kinetic ground state wave functions whose quasi-particle excitations exhibit non-abelian statistics. Also, there are well-known anisotropic phase states in a two-dimensional electron gas, even at filling fraction 5/2. So by placing this state in a tilted magnetic field, there have been experiments that have seen the following. So at zero tilt, so tilt is basically the inverse tangent of an applied in-plane magnetic field versus the transverse magnetic field. So at zero tilt and at 5/2, the longitudinal resistance vanishes, and there's also quantized, although it's hard to see, fractionally quantized Hall resistance. As you slowly turn on the tilt, or slowly raise the tilt angle, the plateau disappears. But at the same time, the longitudinal resistivity becomes anisotropic in the sense that sigma RxX is not equal to RyY. And this type of what I'll call pneumatic behavior, because it breaks a rotation symmetry, but not a Z2 inversion, is also seen at higher lambda levels, say n greater than 2 fillings, where there actually isn't a Hall effect, but still there's some intrinsic pneumaticity. Yeah. So you start with a transverse magnetic field, and then you slowly apply some in-plane field. It's explicitly broken in a lab frame. But what's something that's kind of interesting and mysterious is if you continue to apply the in-plane magnetic field, say where the tilt angle, this inverse tangent, is 76 degrees, you still don't have any quantized Hall resistance, but the longitudinal resistance is actually isotropic. So it's not quite clear. I mean, it's obvious that, I agree with you, it's obvious that some SO2 is broken, but how it's manifest, at least in transport, isn't so. So that's not quite, that's almost the focus of today. So very recently, there have been some tilted field experiments done at the fraction 7/3. What I just told you was about 5/2, which is nearby. And these are more or less standard gallium arsenide heterostructures with sample dimensions, 25 microns squared, with a well width, which is slightly large, which is around 40 nanometers, and some more or less standard values. And what I'm trying to say is these are more or less more or less standard sample, and we're just going to see what happens when you probe it. So the setup of the experiment is again the same. Some transatlantic field, which maybe will vary as you, which sets the filling fraction, and we're going to slowly turn on some in-plane field. And here's what they find. At zero tilt, so this is the longitudinal resistivity. At zero tilt, more or less the longitudinal resistances are isotropic. There's some little bit of anisotropy above 100 degrees, but that's above the quasi-particle gap, and maybe it's some sample dependent. As you slowly turn on the tilt, you start seeing a little more pronounced anisotropy. And finally, once you get to 44 degrees, you see that there's anisotropy in the high temperature regime, but in addition, there's a change of slope along one direction. Yeah, the field is along the red direction. Yeah, it's some crystallographic axis of the sample. But so the change of slope is always the one along the in-plane field. And as you further increase the in-plane field, you see the curves kind of mirror one another. They're not isotropic, but there's no kind of change in slope. So are there other questions about these plots? So the key is that there's some anisotropy kind of more or less present in all these tilts, but the novel thing is that there's a sign change in the resistance at low temperatures, and these are temperatures where the Hall conductance is quantized. So we're in the fraction quantized Hall temperature regime, if you like. So zooming in at 66 degrees tilt, which wasn't shown before, we're going to see the high temperature anisotropy and the change in slope at low temperatures. And this is a plot of the Hall resistance. And so at very, well, not very high temperature, but high compared to this quasi-particle gap. There's no quantization. As you lower the temperature around 100 millikelvin, you start to see a little bit of plateau. And below that temperature regime, there's plateau. But the important thing is simultaneously, you have this change in slope. So there's two different phenomena which are occurring, both the Hall effect and something else, some type of symmetry break. So I'm just going to summarize. So at temperatures below the quasi-particle gap, which here is around 200 millikelvin, the Hall resistance is quantized for all tilt angles. But non-zero tilt, it leads to anisotropy in the longitudinal DC resistance, at least R. For small tilts, the anisotropy is only present in the resistance at temperatures on the order of the quasi-particle gap. And so it's maybe unrelated to fraction quantum Hall physics. For intermediate temperatures, the intermediate tilt angles, anisotropy is still present at high temperature, but also it manifests itself in a regime where the fraction quantum Hall physics is active. I mean, in particular, it was this change in sign of a slope along one direction, which signaled the anisotropy. And then at sufficiently larger tilt, the low temperature non-monotonicity of the resistance gets lifted with only the high temperature anisotropy remaining. So we want to call such a state where the longitudinal resistance anisotropy coexists in the temperature regime where the Hall resistance is quantized, a fraction quantized Hall pneumatic. So it's a pneumatic because some D4 or SO2 rotation symmetry is broken, but there's still a residual Z2 invariance along the pneumatic direction. So this fraction quantized Hall pneumatic is a state displaying both conventional symmetry breaking order and topological order. Other examples are quantum Hall crystals, break translation invariants, and quantum Hall ferromagnetic, which breaks rotation, spin rotation invariants. And so, as we'll argue, the zero temperature symmetry breaking is essential for the shape of the plot seen in the experiment. So that's the point of the talk, to say there's some zero temperature phase transition. Now, there are several theoretical models that describe the fractional quantum Hall effect. So in addition to Laughlin's wave function, there's Jane's composite fermions and this Landau-Ginzburg Chern-Simons theory. And they're all intimately related how you factorize polynomials. So it's natural to ask if the theoretical framework which models the normal fractional quantum Hall phase can be extended to describe the fractionally quantized Hall pneumatic and the putative phase transition that intervenes. So it's the goal of this talk to show that this can be done. So a heuristic phase diagram is following. At small tilt, or a very small in-plane magnetic field, and low temperatures, we're in the fractional quantum Hall phase. As we raise the temperature, we exit out of this regime. It's not a phase transition, but it's just a line, okay, some transition line. What we're going to argue is that as the experiment varies the magnetic field, there's a parameter in our Lagrangian which tunes the theory between the fractional quantum Hall physics and this fractionally quantized Hall pneumatic phase. As you raise temperatures, we're going to say that there's some finite temperature phase transition, which eventually exits you to some intermediate regime where maybe there's a little bit more fractional quantum Hall physics remaining before you finally exit out of that regime. There's also this critical wedge, which I won't really have anything much to say about, but it presumably exists. No, not that I'm aware of. They're really done at discrete tilt angles, so it's not clear that it's a continuous transition. It's not clear that maybe there's a trend. It's not clear the nature of the breaking, symmetry breaking. V star appears not to be at zero. Why say it's not at zero? You see, this is at theta, non-zero theta, and what I'm really interested in is this non-monotonicity of the longitudinal resistance, and that really only occurs for at least some non-zero value of theta, or for some non-zero value of B star. I agree that there is some anisotropy at high temperatures, but we seem to think that this is above at least the fractional quantum Hall regime where it's where the Hall conduction is quantized, which usually occurs around 100 millikelvin. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of this talk. First, I'm really going to take the bottom-up approach by constructing a long-distance effective field theory. And we'll really work from long distance, or from very coarse-grained to more microscopic theories. So we'll start with the construction, and then I'll give a little bit more of a microscopic justification of the model. I'll then compute some DC transport coefficients, and then I'll conclude. Okay, so as a first pass, we can understand the quantum Hall effect in terms of an effective hydrodynamic theory, which Z wrote a nice review about. So the number current of a two-dimensional electrons is conserved, and as we're taught, a conserved current in 2+1 dimensions implies the existence of a gauge field, which just solves the current conservation constraint. Now our job is to construct an effective action for this little gauge field, A sub mu, by writing down operators of lowest scaling dimension. So a mass term, A squared, isn't allowed because it breaks the U1 gauge of variance redundancy. And so the leading operator is the Chern-Simons form with coefficient k, which we'll take to be an integer. And obviously, it's okay that S naught or the Chern-Simons action breaks parity and time reversal because the background magnetic field of the real system does so. So this is fine. And so it's standard to take the leading irrelevant operator to be the Maxwell term, described as action S1. So EI is just the standard electric field, and B is the standard curl of A. And capital lambda is some UV cutoff, because this thing has dimensions of 4. So from this effective action, we can calculate, if we want, the response to an externally applied gauge field, just by minimally coupling in some background field, capital A. And so our full effective action for understanding at least some aspect of the Hall effect is described by S. Chern-Simons, Maxwell, and coupling to external gauge field. And this effective action encodes the fact that the system described is incompressible and has these charge transfer coefficients. So there's no zero frequency longitudinal resistance, at least real. But you can see, as you take omega, or the frequency to zero, you get quantized Hall connectivity. Okay, so that's nice. And so now we have to ask, what deformations of this theory can possibly lead to anisotropic longitudinal connectivities? So let's consider the Hamiltonian of the theory, where all operators are given arbitrary constant coefficients. Well, unfortunately, it's not a significant enough deformation of the theory to alter the real part of the connectivities. So you have to do something more drastic. So to see what to do, it's helpful to rewrite the Lagrangian in a first-order phase space form. So here, the electric field E is treated as a fundamental field. You can see it only appears quadratically. And so if I solve its equation of motion, I'll recover just the usual Maxwell Chern-Simons Lagrangian. I've introduced this parameter R as well, and a parameter G. But otherwise, after rescaling, it's the same action as before. And so recall that E squared, at least, was part of the leading irrelevant operator for the Chern-Simons action. If we assume z equal 1 dynamical scaling critical exponent. But the Chern-Simons Lagrangian is topological. So at the very least, it's consistent with any dynamical exponent. So let's just choose z, or the dynamical exponent, to be 2. And so we can ask, in the first order form of the Lagrangian, what are the leading operators consistent with this z equal 2 scaling, where time is scaling twice as quickly as space, and the gauge field scale consistently with that. So if we maintain a shift symmetry of E going to what's a constant, there exists only one marginal deformation, this di ej squared. I'll say it in a different way in a second. Yeah. So if you don't like that, what I just said, you can say that the theory is obtained by first fine-tuning the coefficient of E squared to 0. That is the theory with z equal 2 scale invariance. So we need to add the leading higher dimension operators from the perspective of z equal 1 scaling theory. Now, there are two possibilities. First is this delta S above, this di ej squared. It's the leading operator that's quadratic in E. But in addition, there's quartic operators, e to the fourth, that can't be added, and they turn out to be marginally irrelevant, assuming a stable vacuum. So the full theory that I want to study is described in this action, which is slightly intimidating. So let's just review. So it has this first order form of how the electric field appears, or the E field appears. There is this higher dimension operator, from the perspective of the Z equal 1 theory. There's some potential, quartic potential, and then the Chern-Simons term. At R equals 0, it has Z equal 2 dynamical scale invariance, and has a one-dimensional space of relevant deformations, which are parameterized by coefficient R. And the phase structure is immediate. So when R is positive, the theory is equivalent to Maxwell Chern-Simons theory at long distances. And so you're just in a quantum Hall regime. When R equals 0, there's this critical point, Z equal 2 scaling. And for R negative, the theory is unstable, somewhat like a negative mass term. And so E wants to condense. Since E is a vector, it condensing along some direction will break the rotation symmetry. And so that's how we're going to obtain a pneumatic. Confused? All right. OK. Are there questions? Well, one confusion might have been, I said E was a vector, and its condensation is going to lead to pneumatic behavior, which is usually parameterized by some director field. What will happen is that E will enter physical quantities squared, and so it'll actually preserve Z2. Sorry? It corresponds to a current for R greater than or equal to 0. You're solving J mu is equal to, yeah. That's only true. That relates fluctuations of E and A to one another. It doesn't relate the condensate. No, I don't think that's, there's not a spontaneous current, no. That's right. Well, yes, it is my favorite number. But another perspective is you could, in principle, try higher Z, but it would be a more finely tuned critical point. I mean, we had one dimensional space of relevant, or just one dimension. But in general, it would be a multi-critical point, so it would be more fine tunings. The equation that relates the current to E it annihilates any constant piece, which would be related to symmetry. I can show you. So what have we gained from this perspective? So by thinking of the pure Chern-Simons theory as a scale invariant theory with dynamical exponent equal to 2, we found a way to engineer a transition from a quantum Hall state to one that breaks rotational symmetry when E condenses. We obtained a critical theory by tuning the coefficient of E squared to 0. Now, you should ask, is this allowed or justified? And so it's the purpose of the next part to say yes or show it. So to do so, I'm going to describe a slightly more microscopic theory. So the problem of spinless planar electrons in a transmagnetic field can be mapped onto an equivalent system described by a bosonic order parameter, phi. This is called so-called flux attachment via some little gauge field, A. So there's the usual time derivative term, spatial derivative terms, a Chern-Simons term, whose coefficient tells you the number of flux tubes which are attached to each particle, and then some interaction term described by some potential V. So particle vortex duality provides a direct link between the previous microscopic action and this effective Chern Simons theory that we studied before. So in particular, the parameter R that was controlling the phase transition and is the coefficient of E squared is mapped to the parameter 1 over M sub E, which is more or less the bare electron mass or the band mass. So what I first want to do is identify how, or tell you how this identification comes about, and discuss why variation of 1 over the band mass, or more appropriately, R, is reasonable. It doesn't sound reasonable right now, right? Okay, so let me just review particle vortex duality. And to simplify the discussion, I'm just going to assume a short-range potential, which is constant. So expanding about the saddle point of the Meinl-Ginzburg description, we obtain a low-energy action. So the potential is basically a negative mass term for phi, which so it wants to condense, and it's energetically favorable for the statistical gauge field, A mu, to just completely cancel or screen the background magnetic field, A. Once you expand about this saddle point in small fluctuations described by rho, which describe the modulus fluctuations, and theta, which are the angle fluctuations, you obtain this action. And this action can be rewritten by introducing an auxiliary field or current, J sub I. And I'm not including any types of vortices, which are non-zero windings of theta. So what I want to do is I just want to rewrite this action. It just means decompose this quadratic term. Okay. So all I've done is introduce J sub I, and you can see if you just integrate out J sub I, you recover some quadratic term in DI, part of the kinetic term if you want. But we don't want to do that. We want to go a different direction. And notice that theta only appears linearly here. And so it more or less is a Lagrange multiplier. And implies a constraint that J, this current J, formed up, and delta rho form a three current, which is conserved. So precisely as we did before, when we have a conserved current, we introduce a gauge field, and this action can then, doing so, we can write this action in this way. And this gives a precise map of parameter G sub E in terms of this band mass M sub E. Okay, so I was just identifying how M sub E was identified with R, okay? So it's really this tuning of M sub E which is gonna do the transition. So in order to achieve this transition, we had to vary 1 over M sub E freely. And this seems somewhat impossible since the bare electron mass isn't a free parameter. But we should remember that even the microcycle Lagrangian should be viewed as an effective one. See, the electrons are confined to a finite width well in the real system, and a strictly two-dimensional theory is only valid at energy scales far below the splitting of any energy subbands for this motion in the z direction. So in attempting to describe this experiment by Gia, the implied magnetic field couples various subbands and surely at least some renormalization of the parameter M sub E. But, I mean, that argument might not have been a little too quick. So don't we still run into something that's called Cohn's theorem, which says that the density-density correlation function at low momenta satisfies this form. So there's a pole precisely at the cyclotron frequency, which is determined by M sub E, without renormalization. It's just a statement that the center of mass mode decouples from the relative coordinates. And so if we were allowed to bury one over m sub e in this Landau-Ginzburg description, we'd explicitly violate Cohn's theorem, because we can calculate this correlation function. But Cohn's theorem just doesn't apply to the experiment. There isn't any Galilean invariance, at least without magnetic field. There's this confining well potential breaks that. And when you tilt the field, basically the couplings between the confining well and the in-plane field couple both the center of mass mode and the relative coordinates. And so there's just no decoupling of these two degrees of freedom. And so you just shouldn't expect a pole exactly at the cyclotron frequency. And a simple quantum mechanical calculation actually supports that the would-be cone pole can actually vary as you tune an in-plane field. Now, I mean, I can't argue that it'll ever go negative or go to zero, but I can perturbably argue that it can vary. Okay. So, so we're going to go with that and allow the effective parameter R to vary as Cohn's theorem, at least in this regime, doesn't constrain its value. So we're more or less identifying R to be a function of the parallel field, and at least a decreasing function. So let's study the finite temperature transport in order to compare this theory to experiment. And now, to obtain non-zero finite T resistivity, we must include the effects of massive quasi-particles. And we're going to assume that these quasi-particles exist for positive R continue to exist as R passes through zero. For this to happen, it in some sense require fine-tuning of two masses to go to zero at the same point. No, I don't know an explicit function, no. I'm more or less going to identify. That's right. But I can only say that perturbatively. In the in-plane field, yeah. Yeah, in the strength. The role of Coulomb interactions? Okay, the argument I'm giving is they don't play a large role in this argument. The cone pole has to do with the lowest excitation the gap in the center mass part of the wave function. And the Coulomb interactions really have to do with the relative coordinates. For free electrons? I mean, the Hall state, or the fractional Hall state, is very dependent on interactions. Course. Is that something that you're saying? Yeah, I mean, you can consider just quantum mechanics of two particles in a magnetic field interacting pairwisely, and you go to coordinates, center mass and relative coordinates, and you ask how the center mass part of the wave function, how the gap varies as you tune an in-plane field, and you see that it decreases as that parameter is increased. Yeah, that's right. Right. But for questions about the center of mass, at least to lowest order in perturbation theory, the Coulomb interactions don't enter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're taking that into account, that these wells have some finite width, and so we should decompose any function into some. There should be some subbands having to do with the finite width. So there's an extra quantum number, say the angular or the frequency of vibration in that direction, if you want. So it's essential because both the relative coordinates and the center of mass get a new quantum number, and it's the confining well which couples those two objects together. But the in-plane magnetic field couples the center of mass direct coordinates in the plane with center of mass coordinates in the z direction, and it's this interaction mediated by the confining well, which will destroy the cone pole and destroy the cone theorem hypothesis. But you don't, at least at lowest order, you don't need to worry about Coulomb interactions to see how the would-be cone pole will vary. But, and sorry? No, yeah, so that's an open question if it occurs for other filling fractions. There have been interesting for two-dimensional electron gas with similar widths for transport measurements with an in-plane magnetic field. And so you apply a current either along the direction of the field, not quantum Hall regime, so there's no transverse magnetic field. So you apply it along the direction or perpendicular. You can see that, or they find that the resistance has some non-monotonic behavior, which is in some sense similar, actually very similar. Okay. Actually the resistance along the magnetic field actually has non-monotonic behavior. Actually, as these experiments show. I'll give you this reference. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm now calculating finite T resistivity, and I have to adjoin to my theory not just our bare action, which looks like this, and is, but also the effects of massive quasiparticles, which I'm assuming exist in the pneumatic regime where R is negative. So I'm doing these by this phi. So we're studying the regime at finite temperatures where R is negative, and so E wants to condense. And we'll take E to condense along the x direction. So the low temperature transport below the gap, at least these calculations are easily performed, and you get a connectivity which looks like this. And this tensor, it gives fractionally quantized Hall conductivity because the quasiparticle conductivity is exponentially suppressed. Just this number is very small, and so you obviously get some quantized Hall resistance. But if you look at the longitudinal conductivity, you see that it takes this form. This is just a rewriting. I'm just defining what these things are. And after inversion, you can take the difference of these two resistivities, and indeed you find some anisotropic behavior. I had to put in this parameter tau, which is some scattering time of these quasiparticles. U parameterized the coupling between the E field and the quasiparticles. delta is just the quasiparticle gap. So in order to plot this function, there are quite a few unknown parameters, and so I need to determine them somehow. So at zero tilt, the DC resistivity allows us to calculate the coefficient here, and also it determines the gap function. Now, we're in this regime, and there's some finite temperature crossover, which restores any Z2 breaking. And this is just parameterized by some finite temperature transition with some exponent beta. So I have to also choose a beta. Finally, there's a proportionality constant, which I'll call M. So again, we've gone from along the zero temperature line to the fresh quantum Hall pneumatic phase, and now we're raising the temperature just to try to compare with the experiment. This is the quantum transition. This is the classical transition. Some Z4 breaking. So what do we retain? We retain some plots. The blue is the resistance along the X direction, and the red is along the perpendicular one. And so you can indeed see that because of the behavior of this function, E sub X, you get some dramatic, dramatically different temperature behavior. So in particular, there's non-monotonic behavior of the top curve as the temperature is decreased. And it's entirely due to the zero temperature symmetry breaking order and the finite temperature phase transition to this state. And I told you there's at least one parameter, this M, which was the coefficient of how the order parameter depended on temperature. And you can see if you vary it, here it's this number 50, but as you lower it, this effect is much less pronounced. Now there is some field, this parallel field. So this Z4 transition, finite temperature transition, is expected to be rounded. So in principle, we need to include some type of scaling function. Choosing a particular form, you indeed can get rounding, and we obtain this theoretical plot. So we can kind of compare some optimistic theory with experiment. So what is a success? So we provided an explanation for the non-monotonic temperature dependence of the resistance having to do with the zero temperature critical point. But a problem, so what are problems? Well, we don't have anisotropic longitudinal resistance above any possible finite temperature phase transition. And another point is the resistances for us eventually vanishes. They both vanish as the temperature is lowered. But in the experiment, which goes down to 15 millikelvin, you don't see any turnover. Not sure what it does. So let me review. So motivated by the novel fractionally quantized Hall pneumatic phase found by Gia et al., we argued for a theory that explains what we think is the most striking aspect, the non-monotonic finite temperature DC resistance along one direction. And this result obtains from symmetry breaking order that coexists with the topological order of the fractional quantum Hall state. So there are a number of possible future directions. So let me summarize them. E of X, well, I mean, it just takes this form, right? Yeah, I mean, it wants to go to a constant, right? It's just think icing, right? Yeah, it's the non-monotonic behavior is the if you don't include the well if you don't include E sub X, you just have decreasing behavior because of the strong exponential. But here, because of the behavior of E sub X and the different exponents along the two directions, you can get non-monotonic behavior.
What's the root of the factor of T?
This factor of T? It just comes out when you do the current correlation function. So it'd be interesting to do transport beyond the linear regime. We did linear transport, but nonlinear would be very interesting. The nature of the massive quasi-particles, which we assumed interpolated without their gap closing to the negative regime, should really be investigated further. A better determination of the microscopic parameters in our effective Lagrangian would be nice. A better understanding of how in-plane magnetic field affects simple just Arrhenius plots would also be nice. If there's sometimes some coefficient, which is temperature dependent, it'd be nice to know what exponent that, or the dependence of that function on temperature. As I said, our resistance predicts that the two resistances will eventually vanish at low temperatures. But it'd be interesting to consider the complementary possibility in which one direction is metallic at zero temperature, while the orthogonal direction is insulated, all the while quantized Hall resistance. So, I mean, the plot isn't, the plot may indicate that, but I'm not aware of any such state. Now, can we understand better how the in-plane field mixes various Landau level subbands, these Z subbands, and therefore changes parameters in our effective Lagrangian? That would be good. I'll come back to the second one. I told you that isotropy, at least seem to be, isotropy restorations need to be occurring as you tune the in-plane magnetic field to be a sufficient magnitude. It's not clear why that's occurring. There's similar experiments which are done at five paths, which I showed, where the plateau is destroyed, anisotropy is observed in longitudinal resistance, but then somehow restored at very high tilt. So maybe it's related. It'd be interesting to see this at other filling fractions. This is at higher Landau level, so you'd expect to see it in such a regime. It'd also be interesting to do experiments to try to determine the cyclotron frequency in these experiments. And then the Landau-Ginzburg theory that I just lightly reviewed allows the computation of a wave function. And we can compare that to a wave function hypothesized by Joint and Muselain for some type of pneumatic quantum Hall state. So the top one is our wave function. The lower one is their wave function. And I'll leave you with that. So, thanks. It's actually, it is incompressible. There's only really a Z, there's only a discrete rotation. So there's not like a ghost down node.
But given that there's a finite conductivity,
oh, you mean in the experiment?
Yeah, in the experiment.
Well, okay, it's not clear exactly what's happening at zero temperature, right?
But thermodynamic
measurement? Not that I'm aware of. I mean, if it's gapless, then I agree it would be some incompressible Hall state. I mean, the Hall resistance is still quantized.
It's
You might think some lines, maybe some lines, and then some small tunneling transverse to the wires. Maybe that's a way to understand it. Yeah?
Sorry, I did not understand where this wave function came from.
There's some formalism of using the Landau-Ginzburg description of computing wave functions, of canonically quantizing that theory. And the wave function is, the wave function turns out to be related to certain correlation functions of this theta field, which I used here. So for example, you can obtain Laughlin wave function by capturing some type of correlation function using the Landau-Ginzburg theory. Using the same type of formalism, you can, so that was for what I call the R greater than zero phase.
So there is a standard algorithm?
Well, there's an algorithm, yes. There's an algorithm given that theory. Thanks.